Pause I Am Radio with your host, Robert Brining, sharing stories from across the United States and around the world. To join the conversation, call 929-477-3572. That's 929-477-3572. Each week, we'll bring you our exclusive HIV scoop with Josh Robbins and your positive message from Rise Up to HIV and Kevin Maloney. Your weekly dose of hope. Pause I Am Radio.
Good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to this Sunday edition of Pause I Am Radio. It is April 12th, and I am so happy to be on air again, kicking off season three. Today's guest, Calvin Pugh, is an amazing advocate. He'll be joining us in a few minutes. But if you missed last week's kickoff of the season three interview with Guy Anthony, definitely go back and check that out. You can find it by going to our website, pauseiamradio.com, or by finding it on iTunes or Blog Talk Radio. It was an incredible interview, and Guy is an amazing advocate, and he's doing some amazing things, and he's definitely somebody to keep an eye on. So go ahead and check that out back in our archives. Again, pauseiamradio.com. I do want to talk about a few things that I got to do over the summer. I mentioned some of it last show with when I had Guy on, because we shared some of those moments together, ironically. So, but one of the things that I happened to attend this summer was the PAWS Brotherhood retreats. I know this is something I spoke a bit about before. The facilitators, Class, Juan, and Mark, those men put this together. This year was their, I believe it was their anniversary, their 10th year anniversary. It was amazing to be there with that energy of people. And it's a spiritual retreat here in the Poconos, Pennsylvania. So it wasn't far from me, not too far from New York. And it's a weekend of connecting with individuals who are a gay or bi and HIV positive, and looking for spiritual connections. And it's incredible just to find more about yourself. I grew a lot. I learned a lot about who I am as a person and the type of advocate I wanted to go. And it was just nice to escape and connect with other positive people on a different level than a normal conference or outing that you would maybe go to. So for me, it was an incredible event, and you should check it out. I know they just had another one. I believe it was last weekend. So if you want to check that out, go to pauseretreats.com or brotherhoodretreats.com, or search them on Facebook. We're going to put some links on our website coming up, and I'll have a link to that there as well. One of the other things I went to was Positive Living, which is a conference that is put on in Fort Walton Beach, Florida. It is by that I've ever been to. It is put on by a gentleman by the name of Butch McKay, and it was their 20th anniversary this year. And they were, it was just an incredible experience. It's a conference that is basically put on for those living with HIV. So there's close to 400 or 500 people that attend, and most of the people there are HIV positive, a huge majority. And it is just going there. It's a conference for those that are HIV positive. So you go there and you're put into workshops that are helping you maybe work on stigma, or work on using social media, or work on relationships, or learning to love yourself again, or women empowerment. You know, there's all different things that they have, and it's just an awesome bonding experience. And one of the highlights of my experience this year was being one of the quilt bearers. Every year during the Saturday, they before dinner, they have a session where they go out and they do some sort of a memorial for those that we have lost to living with, you know, lost to the disease before us. And they used to do a heart circle. They did circles on the beach, and they actually, it's become so big that they had to have two circles, and now they actually do it kind of like on the patio of the Ramada, right off the beach. And I was one of the people who got to actually unfold the quilt and hold the quilt there during the ceremony and guard it and make sure nobody, you know, stepped on it. And it was truly an honor to open that up and to be there, a part of that. It was amazing. I posted pictures online on social media. You can find them on Instagram. There might be a few on Twitter, but Facebook definitely has them if you search Pause I Am Radio. You'll find me and the post for that. So that was awesome. And then I had an amazing opportunity from Johnson & Johnson contacted me and asked me to be one of their HIV ambassadors and work their Donate a Photo booth. And if you're not familiar with what Donate a Photo is, it is an amazing app that is put out by Johnson & Johnson. And what it does is it allows you, once you download it, it's free. It allows you to take a photo. But before you take the photo, you will choose a cause. So there's a whole bunch of different causes that you can pick from. And it's helping maybe kids get through school, maybe helping people with HIV or helping people with cancer, kids with cancer, things like that. You pick the cause that you want to donate to, and then you take a photo. And then when you post it to social media, it automatically uses hashtags and mentions and things like that. And every photo that you post, Johnson & Johnson donates a dollar to that cause. So it's really cool, and you're able to do one photo a day. So there was a booth that was set up there at the Global Citizen Festival in New York, and Johnson & Johnson asked me and our friend here at the show, Kevin Maloney from Rise Up to HIV, and Guy Anthony was there, and we worked the booth trying to get people to come in and take a photo there, and they were donating to, Elizabeth Glacier Foundation for Pediatric Kids with AIDS. They were donating to that cause, and the Black AIDS Institute. They were the two that were there, and it was hashtag Make HIV History. And it was an awesome thing to do, to go there and try to draw people in to take this photo, talk about the photo, talk about what Johnson & Johnson is doing with this app, and how cool it is and how simple it is to just use the app to take a photo and donate a dollar to the cause. So we were able to do that, and I was able to meet some cool people. Mark Cuban was there, and he took a photo with us at the booth, and that was incredible. And the concert that was there, Stevie Wonder, Pharrell Williams, I mean, Green Day, Chainsmokers, it was just really awesome. And I was so glad to be a part of that. And, you know, I really want to thank Tara, Becky, and Christina who made that happen for me and allowed me to be a part of such an awesome event and represent an amazing company like Johnson & Johnson. So thank you to those people. I want to quick play one of our positive messages before I bring on Calvin. I see he's sitting on the line. So Calvin, I'll be right with you. Let's go ahead and play Brady. Brady is actually a gentleman who I met at the Positive Living Conference this year. He's an amazing man who his positive message basically explains what it's like to go from feeling so horrible about your diagnosis and then being able to lift others up by sharing yours.
Hey, everybody. My name is Brady Morris. I live in Nashville, Tennessee. When I was diagnosed as being HIV positive in 2009, I turned right around and tried to commit suicide twice because I thought my life was over. I wanted to just hide from life. I didn't want to do anything. And it took one person coming to me and saying, "Brady, I know that you were just recently diagnosed as HIV positive. I was just recently diagnosed. Can you help me? Can you show me, tell me what I need to do next?" And that was my light bulb moment. I was like, I do have a purpose. I can help. And that's turned my life around. I have completely given my life over to service, to volunteer. And as a matter of fact, that diagnosis led me on a journey, and now I'm even in Africa doing volunteering, working with children who have been orphaned due to HIV, and working with a local women's group, an HIV positive only women's group, which has been so fulfilling. So just because you have been diagnosed with HIV, it does not mean your life is over. There is so much more to keep living for. Stay strong. Love you guys. Say hi, everybody. This is what life is about.
And I love that positive message from Brady, and hearing those girls all cheering in the background and saying hello. Every time I hear it, it gives me chills, and it makes me have a lot of gratitude for what he's doing out there and helping those other people. So it's awesome. So let's talk about today's guest. Calvin Pugh is going to be joining us, a.k.a. Positively Calvin. He is a social media advocate and HIV peer educator in Kansas City, Missouri. After being diagnosed HIV positive in 2016, at the age of 29, he began sharing his relatively short journey with friends and family on Facebook. And after receiving support from for his brave and honest story, he has decided to dedicate and focus using social media to show support and demonstrate hope so others living with HIV around the globe will not feel stigma is something they need to worry about anymore. And he uses the persona Positively Calvin, and he breaks down walls by being him and being bold. And it's something that I think is amazing. He is younger than me, so I consider it as the next generation taking over and basically using social media. That's what social media does. It's you can reach so many people, and it doesn't matter how far your reach is. Each person's reach reaches somebody, and it may not be the reach that I reach. And I think Calvin is amazing with what he does, and he is definitely somebody you need to keep an eye on. So let's welcome Calvin Pugh. Welcome, Calvin. How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
Good, good. I'm so excited to have you on. You know, I came across you first on Instagram, I think, when I first took notice to your work and what you do. And I have to say, it's awesome because, I mean, it's only been, a year? Less than that?
Yeah.
That you've been diagnosed?
A little over a year, yeah. So, it was
a little over a year.
2016, yeah. Yeah.
No, I think it's incredible that you're able to do that already. It took me quite a while to overcome that. I mean, I was diagnosed in 01, and I didn't really start talking about it publicly until 06. So, you know, the journey's different for everybody, but kudos for you know, being able to, kind of not give a crap about what other people think. I think that's kind of something that you demonstrate in your photos and in your social media posts that you're, you know, you don't care what people think. This is who you are.
Well, thank you. It is who I am. And that's, you know, and I was really lucky to be diagnosed and have immediately surrounded by an incredible, support system. We have here in Kansas City, we have such a good network of doctors and healthcare providers and people who are working in the HIV field that I was never alone. It was definitely one of those things too that, you know, I'm a millennial. So I looked out through social media and I found, you know, Josh and you and, Jack McEnroth. And, you know, I was never had that moment of feeling alone. So I never really had that moment of going, oh, it's hopeless. There was
Right.
constant feed in my world of people who were living well with HIV. And I never had that moment of like, oh, it's over.
Now take me back. Now, what made you, was getting tested something that you've done on a regular basis, or was it just random that
it
you
was
happened
something
to get tested?
It was a very regular habit of mine. It was an every 3 month thing. We have a huge amount of testing events here in the city. And so it was just something that we did. I mean, people do, it's a routine thing. We have them in the nightclubs. We have them in everything. Almost every event we have in the city, there is testing at. So it was a normal thing for me. And, you know, and I tested negative 7 months beforehand. And then one day the test was a different result.
And what was that like? What was your thoughts at that moment? Do you remember?
At that moment, I tell the patients that I work with now, I tell people, you know, it's like the TV in the 90s when you couldn't get reception. And that kind of buzzy sound, that kind of like weird feeling of, but again, I mean, I was surrounded by such good people who had such hope and such, you know, pushed me forward that it wasn't a staying there for very long.
Right. Well, that's good. So do you remember when you told your family, because you said in your bio, you say you told them shortly, kind of afterwards, how shortly after did you tell them?
So I was diagnosed in May, and then my mom was almost an immediate conversation. I had just started treatment. I was looking very ill. I kind of had the atypical flu, and I was pulling 75 hours a week doing hair at the time. So I was just not taking care of myself as I should have been. But you know, I'm really close to my family, and there was never a moment that it was like, okay, I can't tell them that.
Right.
And my family's we've always known people who have been positive. So it's my home's always had a lot of gay people in and out of it over the years that It's not like it was something that, you know, I was worried about telling them. I did in November decide that I was, it still felt like kind of a heavy weight through, you know, I'm not one to keep secrets or to worry about or to, you know, not tell everyone everything. So I did a Facebook post and it was really long and I didn't know what was going to happen of, you know, because of it. But I said I was going to do it one way or the other because we ran into a few situations out in public where people were talking, there were murmurs, there were, you know, it's a very small community here. And there was, you know, just kind of some whispers. And I thought, let's just get it out in the open so there's nothing that you can say. And that certainly worked. So it led me. People don't talk. We were sitting on a meeting the other day and we were talking about how Kansas City isn't really ready to have a conversation about HIV. And last year was a huge spike in increase of new diagnosis. And we were sitting down, you know, talking about how, you know, how do we kind of take this back from spreading? And I keep telling people it's about having conversations. It's about knowing people who are positive. They're not, you know, so there's not a stigma of getting tested and there's not a stigma of living with HIV that they would, you know, people would be more willing to do so. And I decided I was going to post this Facebook post and all of a sudden there were people who have been living with HIV forever who were coming up to me in the night at the bar or sending me messages and going, I can't believe you just did that. And for me, it was more one of those things that I was like, well, if I get it off my chest, you know, and I've always kind of lived by a thought process of what other people think of me is none of my business. So,
right. Oh, that's wise. That's wise to think like that, actually. But you mentioned now that you're an HIV peer educator. So you would say that's not something that you obviously was thinking of doing before your diagnosis. I'm assuming that your diagnosis kind of directed you in that area.
Yeah, I mean, I think more so the conversations that I had on social media after coming out about it kind of directed me in that way. The kind of conversations with people. Go ahead.
No, I was going to ask you, did you get any negative feedback from anybody once you posted that online?
Oh, yeah, there was a few of them. But again, that's, you know, when I had such a huge wave of people who were telling me what a brave thing it was, that, you know, that they admired my honesty, you know, that outweighs the, you know, handful of people who didn't care for it. You know, I think if you look through, like, when you see the U=U posts on Facebook now, and I try to not read to the comments because you get those handful of people who are just so ignorant and just so, you know, it's, and you think at this point, 30 years later, we're still being ignorant.
Yeah.
Or some people are being ignorant.
Right. But it's people who are bold like yourself who are out there, you know, making people have these conversations because you're not letting the conversation be forgotten. You know what I mean? And I think that's something that is, you know, commendable. So kudos to you for that. I wanted to talk about, how do you deal with disclosure and dating? I mean, I guess kind of now it's different because you're out, you know what I mean? It's a little bit different, but was there a time in between that you had to deal with disclosure and you weren't comfortable with it?
I mean, I didn't really, I had such a short time between diagnosis and talking to everyone that hasn't really been an issue of mine. I was in a relationship, kind of a really kind of crummy relationship there for the last year and became single in February. And so by February, everyone knows. In fact, last night I was sitting at a bar last night and someone was telling me they needed to get tested because they had some risky behavior one night. And the bartender kind of looked at them all sad, like, and the person said, he's sitting right there. If I end up like that, I'm fine. I'm good. But right now at this point, you know, people know it's all over Facebook and what I do for a living now. It's,
and it's funny because people, since you are so open about your status, people are so willing to open up and tell you everything. Some too much, you know what I mean? But people will open up about everything to you. And it's just like, whoa, I didn't ask for all that.
Right. Absolutely. I was at Starbucks the other day and someone was like, hey, I feel like I can tell you things. This person doesn't know me. I feel like I could tell you stuff, and I'm like, oh, please don't. Please, please don't. I don't need to know your story.
All right, but I always felt like I was that friend, like even growing up when I was younger in high school, that always sought out to help the other friend or was always the one who listened to the other friend and gave advice. I assume that that's a kind of a common theme within other activists that I've come across.
Well, I think there's a saying somewhere that says, you know, we help others to help ourselves. I think we kind of navigate through healing by, you know, helping others become better. In November, after I had kind of posted that post, I started working at the LGBT Center here, which kind of led me to more work with AIDS Walk and things that in the clinic that I'm at now. Just more of that work kind of seamlessly flowed into my life. But I began to, when I started having conversations on Instagram or Facebook with people who, you know, I've had conversations with people from literally every continent, I think, except for Antarctica, but penguins don't get it. So. But I've had conversations with people from all over the world. And the more I talked to people, the more I felt better. So yeah. It kind of naturally led to working where I'm doing what I'm doing now in the clinic. So.
Yeah. People don't realize it. They're always like, oh, well, you know, you're helping people all the time. You know, when do you take time to help yourself or time for you? And I'm like, but you don't understand, me helping people is actually helping me. You know what I mean? It's allowing me to kind of feel good and positive about my life and you know, be happy. You know, because so many times after being diagnosed, we have that depression, that sad, that sad times, you know, not everybody goes through it for a long set of time, but there is that thought where, oh my God, I have something that could kill me. You know what I mean? But now, not any, you know what I mean? So tell me, what are your thoughts on U equals U?
I think it's an incredibly bold message that really brings a lot of freedom to all of us living with HIV who are staying in our care and taking our medications like we're supposed to. You know, I think we have a youth group that we host in my department, and we were talking about it the other night, and they were very confused. Oh, wait, what? Well, so if someone had been taking their medications, I may not have gotten it. And I go, no, but you wouldn't have been here having a good time with us. You know, but I think it's an incredibly, you know, strong statement that's incredibly freeing for people. You know, if you're staying in your care and you're taking your pills like you're supposed to, you can't give it to someone else. So it really hopefully will break down some stigma. There are people who aren't ready for that yet, but we'll, you know, it's now that we just got the endorsement by the CDC, I think that will kind of help fuel it a little further into public knowledge.
Yeah, I think it's awesome. So how do you deal? So what is your support group like? I mean, since you work kind of like in the HIV field, I'm sure you're surrounded by all kind of like medical professionals and things like that. But what is your core support group, I guess? Is that like, because I know you're a real family guy and that's kind of something that I could relate to. But I mean, do you have like a support group that you go to on a weekly basis or?
Not one for myself personally. My department hosts quite a few. I didn't feel like that I needed group activities. I wasn't good in the Boy Scouts. Like doing things with lots of people was never really my thing. you know, self-care for me is an hour and a half in the morning at the gym, but I do have a huge network of friends who are positive here. So if it is something that, you know, we want to keep talking about, you know, we'll all sit down and talk, but I feel well adjusted enough at this point to, and it would be a little weird if I started sitting down in the groups that I facilitate. So,
yeah, I guess that would be a little strange, huh?
Yeah, that would be a little weird for me to sit down and be like, oh,
but I guess what I was getting. I guess what I was getting to is that you obviously would support somebody going to a support group and express the importance of connecting with other people who, you know, who are living with the disease. I know it was something I did for a short period of time. And, you know, it kind of felt good to, for a minute, to be kind of like in the circle instead of, like you said, facilitating the circle. It's kind of like a different approach. So it was cool for me. I liked it. So I want to go ahead. I'm sorry.
Our program hosts 152 groups a year. So
wow.
We have, you know, we definitely recommend them to anyone who comes through our clinic or anyone in any of the medical centers or that network to ours. So we have an average of 20 to 30 people who attend most of our groups. So, you know, we've got about 4,000 people.
What is the name of the, what is the name of the organization you work at? So we can just put that out there so people know.
I work for Kansas City Care Clinic. It's a qualified health center in the Midtown area of the city. And we really cater to people who don't have insurance or can't afford a normal doctor's office. It was founded in 1971 by hippies who believe that healthcare should be a right, not something just for people who have money. And for the longest time, they didn't charge, and you couldn't go there if you had insurance. So everything works kind of on a sliding scale, so we can afford, so people who can't afford medical care can come and be taken care of.
No, that's awesome. That's incredible. And because it reminds me of where I go here in Philly Fight, there was a place that was like that. It was for people without insurance, and that's where I started out. And then once you got insurance or you were working, there was a sliding scale that you paid each time. And, you know, it makes it affordable for you to go and still get all the important information that you need. So, no, I think that's great. So what is it that you do exactly as the HIV peer educator there for somebody who may not be familiar with that type of work?
So what we do is it's someone in our department, everyone in our department is positive, and it gives someone kind of a buddy system. Someone who's positive, who's been through medical care, who's been through, you know, some of those, sometimes the depression or the dealing with their status, stigma. And we kind of go through some core components of education, you know, how the virus works and how it replicates, to how treatment works and where it stops the virus. And we just try to empower people to live their best lives. So I'll meet people who are newly diagnosed or people who are having trouble adhering to their medications. So people who are missing lots of doses, things like that, we'll sit down and we'll kind of work out a game plan of how to better interact in their, or better engage in their medical care and taking care of themselves.
Nice. So I want to take a quick break here and play this week's HIV scoop from Josh Robbins. But when we come back, I want to talk about where the name Positively Calvin came from. And I want to talk about this one photo that you posted on Instagram. And I want to know if you used a real Sharpie or not. But we'll talk about that when we come right back. So we'll be right back with Calvin Pugh.
This is the all-new HIV Scoop with Josh Robbins, exclusively for Pause IM Radio. This week's buzzworthy sexual health news in under 2 minutes. Here's Josh Robbins with this week's HIV Scoop.
Hey, everyone. I hope you've had an amazing week. I know that I certainly have. Robert, how you doing, buddy? How you doing? All right, I'm going to start off with some not-so-great news. I know. Y'all just think that I'm just like Debbie Downer over here. But it's important. There was a recent survey of HIV-positive youth in the U.S., and the results were just terrible, according to Reuters Health. But what it said was nearly 1 in 4 youth living with HIV in the U.S., they don't notify a sex or a drug use partner about a potential HIV exposure, despite medical professionals and others like you and I urging them to do so. And that was all found out from a study of teens and young adults published in the October 4th issue of the Journal of Acquired Immune Deficiency Syndrome, the medical journal. A surprising finding from the survey-based study was that 81% of participants reported not ever being contacted at all from a past partner. Brown University School of Public Health in Providence, Rhode Island presented these results and findings. Now, they entered an online survey, and more than 3/4 of their participants reported that once they learned that they were HIV positive, that they contacted all or at least some of their past partners to notify them that, hey, you need to be tested for HIV. 22% of the participants didn't succeed or just didn't try. And nearly all the participants reported that someone such as an HIV tester or someone like you and I had talked to them about the importance of past partner notification. Better news now, Elton John has been honored at Harvard University, at Harvard, for his work to fight HIV and AIDS. According to ABC News Digital, Elton was awarded the Harvard Foundation's Peter J. Gomes Humanitarian Award at a ceremony last week. Congratulations, Elton John. He said that he's lost friends to AIDS and that he regrets not doing more to help as he battled addiction early in his career, but he said his life changed when he met Ryan White. His AIDS Foundation has raised more than $300 million to help fund HIV-related programs since it was established in 1992. Hey, Elton, buddy, you have way made up for it, and we are so appreciative. I'm Josh Robbins. This was your HIV Scoop.
And there you have it. Thanks, Josh Robbins. Again, you can find more information on Josh by going to imstilljosh.com. Wow, what an amazing HIV scoop this week here. You talk about the surveys that went out in the U.S. About the HIV youth, how one in four youth don't disclose to their sex or drug partners, which is kind of shocking and sad. Education is definitely needed there. And he definitely talked about Elton John winning the award at Harvard, which was pretty incredible. And I think kudos to Elton John. I remember sitting at the Positive Living Conference and hearing Jeannie White, Ryan White's mother, speaking about how Elton John reached out to her and her family during, you know, the whole incident with Ryan White when it was going on, and how he really changed their lives. And I think that, you know, it was in both hands. You know, Ryan changed his life, and he definitely changed Ryan and his family's life. So kudos to Elton and congratulations. I would still love to get that man on this show. So Calvin, are you with me?
I am. Yeah,
I am.
What
I
a
am.
Cool
so
story.
Let's
about
see. Elton. Yeah, he's an incredible man. He's definitely done a lot for people living with HIV, and I think he earned his brownie points, you know, for anything he may have missed previously.
Absolutely, he did.
So tell me about this Positively Calvin. Where did the name exactly come from?
Well, I was sitting down with some friends, and we were kind of talking about, you know, what we were going to, where we saw ourselves working in the next couple of years. And I was winding down things in my salon, and I really wanted to focus my life in the HIV field. And my friends have always said what a positive attitude I have. And I started to think that way. And actually, Josh Robbins and I were having a conversation on Facebook, and he suggested that the way it's spelled now. And he's done a lot of encouraging for me to keep it up and doing what I've been doing. So that's where it came from. So Josh, your favorite Josh Robbins there has a lot of credit.
yeah, he's a cool guy. No, that's cool. So you know, there's one photo that definitely sticks out to me that you posted. It was back, oh God, I don't even know when it was. It looks like it was in October on Instagram, and you have words written all over your body. You know, you have your shirt off, and you have words written like stigma, whore, victim, stereotype, sick. One, did you use a real Sharpie? And two, kind of explain what you were trying to do with that photo.
I think I definitely did not use a real Sharpie. Thank God for the photo. Because then I'd be trying to take it off myself, and that would take a little while. But I was definitely trying to kind of advocate for people who kind of got some of the conversations I was having with people about how they felt about themselves, the things that people had called them. And I decided to dip my toe back in the dating water and had downloaded Grindr, and someone had, you know, spouted off something stupid. And I thought, well, what a time to talk about this, you know, instead of just getting angry. And what can, you know, everyone experiences someone on dating apps or through social media calling them something, or even in public. And I thought, you know, well, let's just take all those things and what I'd written in the original post, I think the one from October, I was just sharing throwback for Thursday. And they, what I'd shared in the original thing was, are the words that you call someone else with, if you had them written on your skin, would you be beautiful? And for me, that was one of the things that all those things that people may have to say, you know, I'm still going to live my life.
Yeah, you know, stigma is one of the things that it's probably the biggest thing, if not, you know, that comes with this disease or come with this diagnosis is the stigma that carries with it and what people think about it. And a lot of that is, you know, what's projected from the earlier days when, you know, people were dying and you were basically, you know, you had days, the months, you know, to live after a diagnosis. And now with, you know, medication and antivirals and U equals U and things like that, like we're learning that we can live a healthy, normal life and have sex and be in relationships and fall in love and have kids and all that crazy stuff. You know what I mean? But the stigma is always the biggest thing. I mean, what do you think we could do moving forward to break down more stigma? I mean, that's the deadly disease, really, not really HIV, if you ask me.
Absolutely. I mean, HIV is a manageable condition at this point. You know, stigma is definitely the deadly part. You know, if people don't get tested for because of stigma, if people don't go get treatment because of stigma, and then we continue to spread the virus because of stigma. People that, you know, I sat down with a client not too long ago who had gotten a CD4 count of less than, it was 6. You know, he was on the verge of death. You know, why didn't he come in? Oh, because what are people going to think? You know, that's what's going to kill people. I think for as far as what could really reduce stigma is people coming out and telling their stories. You know, I think the more that we share stories of living well as opposed to dying, I think that changes the conversation entirely. When we were sitting at this meeting a few weeks ago and we were talking about how this city isn't ready to talk about HIV, well, you know, then of course they turned to me and said, well, you don't care whether they're ready or not. You're going to talk about it anyhow. And I go, well, no, I don't really care whether they want to talk about it or not. We're going to talk about it anyhow. So what we need to do, you know, and the more that someone talks about it and the more that it becomes kind of a normalized part of our conversation, there goes stigma. You know, stigma ends when you have a personal connection to someone.
True. That's true. And I also think that stigma begins kind of with us. It starts within our own mindset, our own thinking right after the diagnosis, you know, especially if it's the immediate thought is I'm going to die, you know, especially if you're not educated. I know at the time when I was diagnosed in 2001, it was somewhat manageable. There was medication, people were living longer, but it still was something that, you know, people were dying of. And now, you know what I mean, people are more worried about other issues like that you get when you're older instead of, you know what I mean, without being HIV positive. You know what I mean? Like we have to deal with other issues because we're living longer. And I think that's kind of incredible.
It is incredible. I think the last thing that I read was that, you know, if people are staying in care and getting in treatment something by your, you know, 30s and 20s, you can live to 80 something, you can live 30 years past what the average population will. I'm not sure that I want to live to see what the world will look like 10 years past what everybody else is going to, but I mean, what an incredible thought process that's not what you have to think about. You know, I don't have to worry about dying tomorrow. I always tell people that, you know, taking care of yourself, and me and my doctor have a very long conversation of, you know, what is it that I can do to improve my health? And having those conversations with your medical providers is really the key to living well. And I think if we can live well, then it shows everyone it's, you know, it's not the deadly disease that I think some of our world still thinks it is.
Yeah, a lot of people still seem to think that, but as long as there's more people like, you know, me and you who are out there sharing their stories and being, you know, open about it, it will break down those walls of stigma that have been built up for so many years. I just feel like those walls are so high. You know, some people have them built so high that they're not able to see past what happened before. I don't know. It's a sad world we live in.
Yeah, and the only way you take down walls is brick by brick, you know?
Yeah.
You only can take down walls one at a time.
Yep, and each person's story who comes out is a brick.
Absolutely.
There you have it. Well, Calvin, we're actually down to the last few minutes. I do want to thank you for coming on and talking with me and sharing your story. You are an incredible young man. I applaud you for what you do. I think it's honest, brave, raw. It's inspiring. And I hope that one day we'll cross paths. I'm sure we will at some point at a conference or some other way. We'll and we can find a way to work together or do something to break stigma down. I think that you're somebody who could help me with that. I think I have a couple projects coming up, and I think I want to keep you in mind to help me with that. So I look forward to working with
Absolutely.
You. I think you're an awesome guy.
Thank you. And thank you for having me. It was such an honor.
No problem. And people can find you on social media by just searching Positively Calvin, correct?
Yes, sir.
And it's Calvin with a K. All right, Calvin, thank you so much. And I hope you enjoy the rest of your day.
Thank you. You too.
All right. Have a good day. All right. There you have it. For more information on Calvin Pugh, you can go to our website, PauseTimeRadio.com, and we have links there to his social media. So again, thanks, Calvin, for joining us. We're going to close out with Lexi's positive message. We want to also remember to send some love to our friend Kevin Maloney from Rise Up to HIV. We're thinking about you and keeping you in our thoughts, buddy. So keep trucking.
I don't have any issues with having HIV because I've accepted it. And I know no matter what, everything's going to be okay. I have two options. Choose to be sad about it or be proactive and positive. I'd rather be happy, so I educate myself, which creates confidence. And I understand why other people make jokes or may hate it. It's because they don't understand it, so they are scared, which is a natural human reaction. So therefore, I don't take it personal. I educate them to help them feel comfortable. I stay calm and normal because my energy will be their energy. I don't care about what people think. I know the truth about HIV, and I'm okay with that. What others say does not affect my life. I have a choice to allow that energy in or not. That's theirs to keep, not mine. I know I will live. I know I can have kids without them contracting. I know I can be in a relationship and have all the sex I want. What more can I ask for? I may have less energy some days. I take meds every day. I go to the doctors every 6 months for a checkup on my health. That's not so bad to me. We gotta just accept what is, enjoy life day to day, and let the rest go. This is why I don't worry. My medicine is just a daily routine. It's not an HIV reminder. I choose to live a normal life. I mean, my life is normal. I just have a manageable virus that I take meds for. That's all.
Thanks for listening to Pause I Am Radio, your dose of hope. Connect with the show at PauseIAmRadio.com or on social media. And we'll see you next time.